I don't want to cause any problems, Lieutenant. I just want a new partner.
Oh, I understand. Your partner's a racist prick, but you don't want to stir up any bad feelings with him.
Well, he's been on the force for a long time. And
17 years.
And I do have to work here, sir.
So, you don't mind that there's a racist prick on the force. You just don't want him to ride in your car.
If you need me to go on record about this, sir, I will.
That'd be great. Write a full report. Because I'm anxious to understand how an obvious bigot could have gone undetected in this department for 17 years, 11 of which he was under my personal supervision, which doesn't speak very highly of my managerial skills. But that's not your concern. I can't wait to read it.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Richard Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to fall down the stairs in slow motion, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, and usually it's not slow motion, although I do fall down the stairs about 3 times a week. It's usually pretty violent and played for a laugh. So.
Do you, like, crumple up at the bottom of the stairs and cry a little bit?
Yes, every time.
Very nice. Yeah, we'll get into it, but that part of the movie I was like, are we doing this right now? Okay.
We'll get there, don't you worry.
Well, welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is episode 26. I've been moving quick. Apologies that we missed last week. We had a tight recording schedule, and then my power went out right when we were going to record. So thank you, Heat Dome. That was going over Indiana the past few weeks.
Well, we've had it, too.
Yeah.
How's it feel?
Yeah, the entire Midwest just got absolutely cooked. But anyway, we're back now. If you like our show, be sure to tell your friends about it. This is the show where every week we review a movie that was connected to the previous one we watched. Last week we watched The Heat, and we liked Sandy B in that, so we followed her to Crash from 2004. Perk, why don't you intro this movie for us?
Yeah, all right. Crash is a 2004 joint directed by Paul Haggis, and it's interweaving several narratives about race and race, racial and racist culture, and is it L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
In L.A. And it stars Don Cheadle and Sandra Bullock and Matt Dillon and Thandi Newton and Terrence Howard. It's
everybody.
It's a kind of a who's who of a cast. Yep. Ryan Philippe, notorious for never really being successful at anything he's done.
Wow, for taking shots.
He's just like, it's not even personal. I just swear I've seen him attached to so many show pilots that have failed.
Oh, for sure.
And it's always a funny bit, but I think it was, I forget if it's called Yellowstone, the show.
It's based,
I don't think, it might not be that one. A Big Sky, actually, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
And it's about, like, a human trafficking ring in Montana with, like, over-the-road truckers. And Ryan Philippe's in it, and he gets domed in the first episode. And it's like, oh, yeah. They got him in for what little name value he has, and then sent him packing. Sorry,
it looks like he spoilers. Did 5 episodes. Oh, Big Sky.
Oh, he must have been in flashbacks.
Maybe, yeah, he must have been in flashbacks.
It's pretty unequivocal that he gets yeeted.
Yeah, he's one of those actors that has a very punchable face.
Unless the big twist was that he comes back to life and is the bad guy, in which case I hope that show got canceled. But yeah, couple fun facts about Crash. Paul Haggis, the director, is the only person to ever write the screenplay for 2 consecutive Best Picture winners, because he wrote Million Dollar Baby, mm-hmm. Which won Best Picture the year before. And then for the scene where Michael Pena, right?
Yep.
His character is trying to talk to his daughter under the bed.
Mm-hmm.
The director, Haggis, told Pena to talk to her like he would talk to a guy in a bar.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not really how it came off.
I'm glad it didn't come off that way. It was a very touching scene.
Yeah, all right. There it is.
There we go. So have you seen this movie before, Perk? I can't remember.
Nope, first time.
Okay, I'll start with you. What did you think of the movie Crash?
So the other little fun fact that I didn't mention is, for me, the well was a little bit poisoned. because I know that Crash usually ends up right around bottom three of everyone's rankings of best pictures winners.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's often cited now, as the worst best picture winner.
Is that because 2004 was a bad year, or people think this unduly won over other movies in that year?
No, specifically they think on the value of the movie.
Okay.
Because it doesn't often come up. Well, I mean, I'm sure it does, because I think Brokeback Mountain was the same year. Mm. I can't speak to whether it should have won or not, because this is the only movie from that year that I've seen.
Sure.
From Best Picture. But just specifically ranking the Best Picture winners on value.
Gotcha.
Generally, this one winds up near the bottom. Not for me. It's very ambitious.
Yeah.
It really shoots for the moon, and it's just doesn't really do it. Like, I like where their head and their mind was looking.
They tried.
And the execution just kind of falls flat.
Now, I have to ask, are you talking more about the amount of characters and storylines, or about the racial commentary, or both?
A little of both. Okay, so I think the biggest problem I have with this movie is that all of the characters in this movie are, their whole being can be pretty much summarized in one sentence. Because they only have, you know, each probably 15 minutes of screen time. So there's just not enough time to really do any justice to any of the characters, really. I mean, some more than others.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're like,
they all have one good moment and one bad moment.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's very simple. And that on the racial justice side of it, it's a very simplified portrait, featuring a lot of caricatures.
Mm-hmm.
There's some nuance, I will say, cause at the start I was thinking that it was tough because most of their portrayals were not nuanced at all. It was just like, oh yeah, that's racist.
Mm-hmm.
Check box. Yep, that one. That's racist. All right, got that one.
Mm-hmm.
They do build on it a little bit, but there were times, especially in like the first quarter of the movie, where I like laughed out loud. This movie's not playing for laughs, but mm-hmm. there were just a few scenes that were beyond comical.
Yep.
And yeah, like they had the right ideas in mind, but the execution is just like head scratching.
Yeah,
at points.
Yeah, I'm in a similar spot. This movie is so I cannot pin down how I feel about it. I think they had good intentions, right? But at the end of the day, what I keep coming back to is this is a movie written by white people for white people, and by that I mean all of the racist actions in this movie are so blatant and over the top and just heavy-handed that I think the average person goes, well, I'm not as bad as that guy, so I'm not racist. Because I don't go into a person's place of work and tell them because they're black that they don't deserve their job. You know, I might think that, but I don't say it out loud to their face, you know. And I agree with you. There are some moments that I really like. To me, the best scene in this movie is when Don Cheadle's character is talking to the Flanagan character about what to do about the police officer that shot the other police officer and how they want to play this, you know. And because Flanagan straight up, like, he's like, I know, because, well, he's being racist but also understanding at the same time. He's like, fucking black people, man. Like, I know they have it worse off because of this reason, which are all accurate. It's like, you know, terrible schools, you know, people being racist to them for job opportunities, just opportunity in general. But also, why do they keep doing cocaine? You know? So, like, you have a character who understands the problem, but is still being racist. Like, it's that whole scene, I think, was the best scene in the movie. There's other stuff that is just so heavy-handed. It's hard, like you said, to not laugh at or be like, what are we doing? Like, I think that Sandra Bullock's character, just her storyline, is just laughable. Like, what? Well, I did laugh a lot when she fell down the stairs in slow motion.
No, like, I agree.
Horrible.
That scene was dreadful. The music in it was awful.
Awful.
It was super traumatic.
It came right after the fucking shooting scene, which is the best, arguably the other best scene in the movie. I was actually like, I actually cried during that scene.
I'm with you.
The very next scene is the slow-mo fall down the stairs. It's just, God, what are you doing?
Oh. No, so that's one of the reasons why this I struggled to see this as a best picture,
mm-hmm.
because there's a whole segment of the movie that is just terrible. I don't love a few of the narratives, but Sandra Bullock's story is awful.
It's awful.
She is literally just a 2D drawing of racist white woman,
mm-hmm.
and it's like she fell down the stairs, and the only one there to help her wasn't her white friends, it was the housekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, really makes you think. No, it doesn't. Doesn't really make really you think doesn't. At all.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like this whole movie is built on commentary about stereotypes, but it's said by stereotypical characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, Ludacris mm-hmm. is a good example of that. And his character, I cannot figure out how I feel about. Because on the one hand, I feel like he says a lot of stuff in this movie. Not everything he's saying is right. He's very confident about everything he's saying. But he's also contradicting himself, right? In his actions.
Yeah.
So I think his character is interesting. I don't think it's done super well, but I think it's at least interesting. Another storyline that I did not think landed was Terrence Howard and Dandy Newton's storyline. Their back and forth just didn't work for me. Like, because I obviously, I'm glad that the police were shown in this light of the movie. The police are fucking terrible, right?
But wait.
What?
That was just more leading on to whenever we discuss that
storyline. Yeah, story we'll get to that.
Continue.
And the scene where they get pulled over initially, Matt Dillon, like, sexually assaulting her, horrible, right? And like, that scene was done well. The conversations after where she becomes, like, hysterical woman who's too emotional, I think is not written well. Like, I think the women in this movie, honestly, are not written that great. Her and Sandra Bullock are both hysterical, emotional women that the men have to be, like, calm down to. The amount of times men say calm down to women in this movie, too fucking many. Too many. And it's like, okay, yeah, this movie was written by a white man. I can tell. Like, and so it's stuff like that where it's like, I just don't think all this stuff is landing. There's too many characters in this movie. You should have cut out probably 2, 3, or 4 characters and just gave more time to some of these storylines. I think the Ryan Felipe storyline is kind of interesting, but also not quite, there's not quite enough time spent to it to see, like, to make the turn, quote unquote, like, pay off, you know? I don't know. It's doing too much, and there's not enough people. This movie's talking about a lot of different ethnic groups that these people were not consulted when making this movie. You know, it's what this movie felt like what white people think that they do or think or talk about.
Yeah, so to circle back to the Thandie New, is it,
yeah.
You say Tandy?
I don't know if it's Thandie or Tandy. Let me look it up.
Okay, well, I'm going to say Thandie, and then feel free to tell me I'm wrong in the comments, listeners. Her storyline with Terrence Howard, I think Terrence Howard was okay. I think mm-hmm. he was pretty good, and then kind of borderline in other places. I think Thandie Newton was bad. It was one of those, clearly she knew she was coming into this movie looking at about 10 minutes of screen time,
mm-hmm.
and about 8 minutes of screen time is yelling or hysterically crying, and she way, way overacts. She's just screaming the whole time, and it just feels like, oh, definitely you're just going for an award here. Because she's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
She's in... I know her from... I've seen her in the first season of Westworld. She's fantastic.
Yeah, no, she's a super really good actor. Yeah.
And, like, her performance in that is so much more reserved,
mm-hmm.
and she has more, like, range to act within, whereas in this one, her own... Like, she has the smallest range, and it's only screaming. That plot line, although I like some of the themes behind it, it didn't work for me because she was distracting, honestly. She was...
Yeah.
A little over the top.
And I think it was the writing. I think it was the writing, and... It's hard, because, like, after that she gets assaulted, I understand why she's upset, for obvious reasons. But I appreciate that she admits later that Terrence Howard did the right thing, because, like, yeah, they would have gotten fucking shot, you know, if he had done something. But this, the whole thing is just, I think it's just overacted, and it just plays too much over-emotional woman, which is a trope that I just fucking hate, you know?
Yeah.
Also, I'm looking, I think it's Tandy or Tandy Way. I think maybe you pronounce the last syllable. I'm sorry. If you're listening, I apologize.
I'm sure she's busy with other things.
But yeah, there's just too many storylines in this movie.
Yeah, so, and then we, you, next you jump to the cop storyline, which I think could be, this is the only place where there's a little bit of nuance, and even the nuance is like, we've got surface level, and then we cut one below, and that's it. And the trouble is, this is another one where you need to give it some time, you need to better develop these characters, because Matt Dillon's character is racist cop.
Yeah.
Racist, dirty cop. That's,
and he plays, and it well. Matt Dillon is a great asshole.
I will say, he's one of the, characters, or one of the best actors, performances.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just a 2D character, and so then when he has this hero moment, which is a weird one, because it's like, what are you trying to say, movie? Just because you're a racist asshole, actually you're a hero after all?
I got more of the
message we want.
I think I got more of the, look, she's an actual person, you know, that deserves, whose life matters, and you should save her.
Right.
But it could be taken that way as well. I think, I will say that, I think that scene was shot well. I think the cinematography of the rescue scene was done really well.
Right. But from a writing perspective,
yeah,
he has this scene where he saves her. And, you know, he has this stuff with his dad and all that, and it just paints him as a really good guy. But from a writing perspective, it just feels like they took this good guy character and then just wrote a bunch of racist dialogue for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't really feel ingrained in his person. It's just like, oh, yeah, he just racially abuses a woman on the phone and in person, and he gropes up a woman. It feels like almost two different characters, and it's hard to piece them together because those two characters are never on the screen at the same time.
Right.
The racist dirty cop and the hero good guy are always separate because there's 20 minutes of movie in between.
Right.
And then vice versa, Ryan Philippe has no character. new guy cop, by the rules, play by the book, wants to turn him in, like, which is not a character because it's been done 70,000 times. Including every week on all those crime procedurals on every network television.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has that moment where it's like, where he shoots the Don Cheadle's brother. And if you have been asleep for the entire first half of the movie, you probably didn't see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
but if you paid attention to Matt Dillon's obviously parallel character foil arc, it's like, yeah, okay, he's Ryan Philippe is going to kill a black guy. That's just how this is going to go.
The problem is, I just didn't buy. He had a. Okay. We see him in the locker room at work, and he says hi to a dude, and the guy says nothing back. So he's like, I'm in a bad mood now. And then because he's in a bad mood, he shoots a black guy. He's more on edge. And it's like, I don't buy this. Like, and maybe I should buy it. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I need a little bit more of, like I said, this character getting corrupted and turning. You know.
No, yeah, and he's supposedly painted as this good guy, but he overreacts immediately. I think you're right. That single line is, or that single scene is like, this is establishing he's in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it wouldn't make sense for him to overreact and kill the guy.
Yeah.
Because, like, all that dialogue in the car is harmless, and then he's like, oh, yeah, get out of the car. It's like, what?
Yeah.
No, people don't act like that. That's
it's not how
people work.
Yeah, I just... Let's switch to a more positive note. The best storyline in my book in this movie is the Michael Pena and the Parisian family connection. I think that is done super well. I think, because you do get kind of this immigrant story from the Parisian family's angle of, like, them trying to run this business, but he just doesn't, the issue with English causing issues, and then him with his daughter, I think everything is fantastic, and then the scene where he shoots her is just absolutely heartbreaking. But I do like the reveal that she bought the blanks, which, you know, I saw coming as after he shot, I'm like, oh, she got blanks. But I think that was all done really, really well.
So the is it Persian, not Parisian?
Sorry, yes, Persian.
Right. Yeah, the Persian family storyline didn't really work for me because, once again, it's a very two-dimensional caricature. I think it's a, I assume, all right, this is one thing where I can't relate because it's not an experience I've had, but I assume that all the stuff around their story is a pretty decent perspective of something that a family like that can go through for like the 5 minutes of establishment that it got. But other than that character just like, doesn't have much depth and is a drugstore owner because, of course, has to be a,
yeah,
you know, a corner deli owner or something like that. The blanks I didn't see coming, actually. I thought they were just going to kill the kid because that's just...
Yeah.
That's as heavy-handed as that could have been, so it would have made sense for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I immediately understood that it was blanks, but then they went and hand-fed it to us that it was blanks, where they pulled out the box and it said blanks, and it's like, yeah, I feel like most people put that together. I don't know that you needed to show us, but I guess, you know, if you want your message to be as digestible as possible, you kind of need to hold people's hands.
Yeah.
I
appreciate his daughter's video game logic that she used in that situation, you know, where it's like, oh, I got this item that can block everything. Of course I'm going to jump in front of the bullet because it'll obviously work. I'm like, yes, this is the kind of thinking we need. All right. This is.
So I loved Michael Peña's character and his relationship with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too deep, but you don't really need all that much time to establish that relationship.
Yeah.
And I think it's really well handled. I think Michael Peña is great. I think the daughter actor is good enough,
mm-hmm.
Not distracting in any way. And I like just Michael Peña's character as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he's less of a caricature.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, if he were on par with some of the other characters in this movie, he would like have left. From putting on Sandra Bullock's new locks, he would have immediately gone to, like, a gang meetup.
Yep, yep, yep.
And it's not. He just goes home. So yep. there's a little bit of wiggle room on his character, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, going to what you said about the Persian family, it is a stereotype. And that's the thing, yeah. There's just too many stereotypes in this movie while they're trying to make commentary about stereotypes. Like, you got to pick a lane here. Like, you can't be doing both. What do you think about Don Cheadle's character?
I think Don Cheadle's good. I think he doesn't have all that much to do from a performance standpoint. And I like the storyline, kind of. It's a little boring because it's entirely bureaucratic, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I like the scene that you were talking about in the meeting room when he's talking about essentially... like, false flagging as, like, a poor black man was shot down even though, you know, he stole all this money and
mm-hmm.
was making off. And the guy who actually stopped him and, you know, put an end to that is going to go down to jail because he's got a poor record. Like, I like that because that's pretty realistic.
Yeah.
Where people will use any opportunity they can to get a PR bump.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Don Cheadle was pretty good. The decision to let the white guy go down, I guess it, you know, whatever, it makes sense. Self-preservation overall, I suppose. But he does have to deal with, what's his name? Mummy guy.
Brendan Fraser.
Did not like him at all. Thought he was terrible.
You think the scene where he's like, I need to be putting a medal on a black guy tomorrow was a little too heavy-handed?
I think it's definitely something that could happen, but it, like, even the scummiest of the scum don't put it out there like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll say, like, we need some good PR. What can we do? You know, they don't say, I need to pin a medal on a black guy.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan Fraser is super hammy. I think he makes for a great husband for Sandra Bullock because they are the two worst performances in this movie by a country mile. I think they're both terrible. God, his line delivery is so stilted and awkward and feels like as if he's reading straight off a teleprompter. And his lines too are like, just like, I don't know, give him a racist line here. Maybe that'll work. Don Cheadle, I like.
I
think that the twist that his brother, just another thing like this with this movie, the twist that his brother is the guy who died is immediately obvious.
Yeah, you saw that coming. You knew it was to be him or Ludacris. You know, one of the two would be his brother.
Right.
I will say I didn't need the stereotype of his mom being a drug addict. How many times we've seen a black drug addict mom? Like, it's
a little much. You know,
that's but the idea, I would have actually liked a little bit of, like, why him and his brother became estranged. I mean, we get kind of, like, he went off to do his own thing and his brother stayed home, but...
It's another one of those things where I actually think if you were to make a movie out of one of these storylines, I think it would be Don Cheadle's. I think it would be a really interesting movie.
Yeah.
Just because, like, the dirty cop angle is, like, that... I kind of enjoy that storyline, too, but I think it's been done so many times.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the more bureaucratic side of it is a little less explored, a little less beaten path.
I definitely did not need the Persian guy's daughter to be the coroner. We did not need that coincidence.
Bro, I didn't even notice.
It's really? Just, oh, yeah. I saw that. I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Because they got mentioned, like, oh, you have to go to work. Oh, I'm working later, you know. And she was the coroner that presumed his brother, or, like, that was showed his brother to him and his mom. And I'm like, can we not? This is too many coincidences now. That's become unrealistic.
Well, it's purposefully crossed over like that, and it's obnoxious.
Yeah.
Like, it... Obviously, that's... They've designed it that way. They want these all to be interwoven, but they don't have to be. I mean, they do based on... This is not the right structure for this kind of movie.
Yeah.
It just boils down to that. I'll spoil on one of my... one of my recommendations based on this movie, before we tie back in, because there's some more stuff I want to talk about. But Love Actually, have you seen it? It's a rom com. I quite like that movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really good time. All the characters are super shallow, but that's okay because it's a rom com.
Yeah.
Who cares?
It's not doing any heavy lifting.
Yeah. All these characters, like, their total story time is probably 20 minutes, but that's enough, because it's like, you know, like, the one that comes to mind is, like, Liam Neeson and his love interest. It's just like, yeah, old guy, wife's gone, meet someone new. It's like, yeah. Right, or, no, it's the kid's love interest, right? Or is it Liam Neeson?
I don't know. I don't remember.
But it's another one where they all cross over, and it's fine that they do, because there's nothing to dissect.
It's a rom-com. It's, yeah, it's just fun.
Yeah, it's just a fun love movie. And it works like that because you don't have to approach anything with gravitas.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally just who loves who, the end.
Yeah.
But having that structure kind of pushed into a movie dealing with race... You know, even having all these parallel storylines is one thing that I don't think works. But kind of forcing them all to coincide is a stretch.
Yeah.
And what you were just talking about, where the Persian daughter is the coroner. Who cares?
Yeah.
The coroner didn't even need to be a person.
No,
but
that
could
have
been
just any person. You didn't have to figure out what her job was. It's fine.
It's doing too much.
The other thing in this Habits movie that was like, we did not need this, was the guy that Ludacris hit was a human trafficker. What?
That was another one.
I was like, what?
That was another just like, why isn't the movie over yet?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
It's because...
That's right. They ran over a guy like 2 hours ago.
It's because Ludacris didn't have his good guy moment. They had to give him a good guy moment. What better way than...
He needed a good guy moment.
Have him save these... Like, what the fuck? That one came out of fucking nowhere, dude.
Literally out of nowhere, and it was so forced and so contrived, and it's like him driving them to probably what I assume was Chinatown.
Yeah.
It's just so tough. It's annoying. Because it just doesn't feel like it needs to be there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be there. You could have just had Ludacris walk off after the Terrence Howard interaction, because you know that he
learned something.
Mulling things over in his mind. But
yeah,
he's learned his lesson. He doesn't need to also have a redemptive. Yeah, you're right. Because almost every character has a super negative and then a positive. Because, you know, it's not as simple as, you know, racist cop, because he's actually a hero. Like, that
he
excuses
loves his dad.
The fact that
yeah.
he's a terrible person. He loves his dad, but
mm-hmm.
brutally hates black people, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah. The only character that doesn't have a bad moment is Michael Pena, and that's why I love him.
Yeah.
He's the only character that doesn't say anything racist and doesn't have a bad moment.
But yeah, I mean, the guy at the beginning of the movie that gets run over.
We didn't need a storyline for him. And his wife being the person that got in the car accident in the beginning. Like, we didn't need that connection.
No, that was also stupid. It's just this didn't need to be how this goes. But, you know, he gets run over. And his positive in the story is he got run over. He's his victim.
Yeah.
And that's his positive. And his negative is that he's a human trafficker.
He got paid, so he's like, cash that check. I don't know if he was a good human trafficker. He gets people to America to like help save them, or if it was like, I don't know. We just did not need that in this movie at all. This movie's already long enough and is trying to do way too much.
Yeah.
One thing,
that's the thing, is like you think back about this movie, and you know, a movie like we watched Moonlight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Moonlight has pretty much three separate narratives, but they all hit and they all stay with you. Whereas like I didn't even remember about the human trafficking plotline until you brought it up.
So useless. It's absolutely useless in this movie.
It's no real purpose.
I totally
other than to be another connecting fiber.
Exactly. I forgot to mention when we first started talking. So watch the opening credits of this movie. It is like big name. It's like, okay, we're in for a something here. But did you catch the name of the casting director?
Nope.
Fucking legend Sarah Halley-Finn, man. She is the casting director for every fucking major movie in Hollywood, and more power to her. She's done the entire MCU. She did Everything Everywhere All at Once. She's done just a ton of... She's like the best casting director in history, in my opinion. And when I saw her name popped up, I just got happy. Because good for her for getting all these actors in here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't pinpoint any character that was wrongly cast.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're all pretty perfectly cast. It just doesn't work out with some of them.
No. I got it.
Bro, was Sandra Bullock on set for 3 hours? Is that...
I know. I just gotta give a shout out to her, because I think she does not get recognized enough for all the amazing work she's done. So
clearly, I have Sarah no Allison. Idea who she is.
Yeah.
But that's impressive.
I think that's about all I have on this. It's just, like I said, very good intentioned. It's just, this movie could have been so much better if they had cut down the scope and ambition, brought in some writers that were actually a part of these communities that they were trying to say something about. Because the thing too is, like, racism that happens today is not the racism we see in this movie. People do not just say blatantly racist stuff to people. It's much more... It's more of what Ludacris and Don Cheadle's brother happened in the biggest movie, where they had to wait longer at the restaurant, or Sandra Bullock moving closer to her husband when they saw them. Like, that stuff is what racism is like for most people. It's not fucking Matt Dillon sitting in the office with Shaniqua and just fucking saying horrible shit to her, you know?
You reminded me. I read a review which said, this is a movie that does everything in its power to forgive the system.
Yeah.
It points everything towards these are bad individuals. Like, these are bad individual choices, and kind of just pushes aside systematic racism.
Even the part where Flanagan mentions systemic racism, he still says, but why do they keep doing coke? You know? So yeah. It's like, even when you had it.
It's, you know, it's just too heavy-handed, and... you know, it is often a lot more reserved than that. People don't just come out and say to a black man, why do the blacks keep doing coke? That's not real. Nobody, like, that's not how it works. You've just made a 2D portrait of racism.
Or like Sandra Bullock yelling at her husband about how she thinks this dude's a gangbanger when he's in the next room. It's like, what are you, like, this doesn't fucking happen. And maybe it does happen later behind closed doors, or maybe, like, that you think these things. Someone fucking does this shit on a frequent basis. I'm not saying this stuff never happens in America. I'm just saying this is not the norm, and this is not the racism that most people experience. Therefore, I don't think a lot of people are going to relate to this movie in a way that is meaningful, you know?
No, it's not especially connective to a personal, any personal experience. I mean, obviously there are people who will connect with this from a personal level, who've been victims of such racism, but I feel like many more examples in the world are far more reserved. And I, you know, I was talking to my parents about this, because they're big fans of this movie, and they're saying, well, you don't understand because you were so young, but this kind of thing was revolutionary at the time.
And I believe that. I think in 2004, this movie probably made a lot of waves. It doesn't mean it's good. It doesn't mean it still holds up.
Right. And the thing too is, what Do the Right Thing came out in what, the 80s?
Yeah.
And Do the Right Thing has a much better picture. Like, the dynamic between the Italian family and Mookie, it's far more, like, close to what, you know, most people experience, just repressed racism and kind of more, like, working within a system of racism.
Yeah.
So,
but white people didn't go see Do the Right Thing. They went and saw Crash because there's every fucking actor on the planet in this movie. You know?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you get the big names and people fill the seats, but often these big name Oscar blockbusters don't have as much to say as they think they do.
Yeah.
Because they try and make everything infinitely accessible and try to appeal to the biggest audience possible. And I think my folks think that the movie ended up getting panned because right wingers all were super offended by it. But I'm sure that's the case.
Yeah.
Guarantee you that's the case. But if anything, it's more generous to them because the most racist white guy in the film ends up being a hero.
Yeah.
So it kind of strikes me as more of a people getting mad about a movie they didn't see kind of a thing.
Sure.
But despite that, I just don't think it's a very good movie. Yeah. Like, politics aside, I think structurally it just doesn't really work.
Sure. You mentioned Love Actually. Do you have any other recommendations you do?
Yeah, so I went with Love Actually, which is a movie I quite like,
mm-hmm.
Which is the same structure of, 10 interweaving narratives. And then I'll throw it to another one that I don't like at all, God's Not Dead, which is an awful, awful movie, which also, for no reason, has, 4 or 5 interweaving narratives, and they're all very preachy, of course.
That's one of the Christian movies, right?
Yes. It's the one where, the college professor tells the students day one to write on a piece of paper and turn it in, God is dead. It's like, okay.
Okay.
Can you cite any experience that backs this up, or is this just some canon you've come up with in your mind about how Christians are oppressed?
I'm looking at the IMDb page now, and the trailer's just auto-playing. One of the dudes from Duck Dynasty is in this movie.
No, they're in the movie as a cameo, to talk about their relationship with Christ on TV, and has one of those moments where at the end of the movie, all of the character threads, they all end up at a Newsboys concert at a stadium. The Newsboys being a Christian pop group.
Of course they
do. But yeah, it's terrible. It's fantastic for Drinking Games.
What do you think this movie has on Metascore?
Drinking Game. 12?
You're close. Well, 16.
All right. 16 yep, Metascore. Seems about right.
4.6 IMDb rating. That is brutal.
Yeah, for another movie that has interweaving narratives for no reason and it doesn't work.
There you go.
God's Not Dead. There you go.
My recommendations are on the racism angle. We've talked about it 1,500 times. If you learn one thing from this podcast, go watch Do the Right Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. But besides that, we talked about it enough. The other show that I've watched recently that I think has one of the best takes on modern racism is actually Peacemaker. The spinoff of the new Suicide Squad movie with John Cena. I'm telling you, that show is so much better than it has any right to be. And the commentary it has about modern racism and white supremacy stuff is absolutely incredible. Really highly recommend people check it out. Even if you're not into superhero stuff, watch the show. I think the character work is absolutely phenomenal.
I should check that show out because I liked that movie a lot. I think John Cena was one of the best parts.
No, watch one episode and you'll understand kind of what I'm talking about. It's only 8 episodes, I think, hour each, so it's not a super long watch.
Gotcha.
But yeah, definitely check out Peacemaker. All right, well, that is our review of Crash. I will reveal at the end of the episode we're watching next week. But before that, we have a lot of bonus reviews because Perk, it's been 2 weeks since we last chatted.
It has.
And that's... And maybe you know this, but since we've chatted, the world has gone to absolute shit even more than it already has. So I've been needing to watch a lot of things to distract myself. I'll start because I have a lot of stuff here, and then we'll ping pong. What do I start? I'll start with Obi-Wan because that ended last week. Not much to say on it. The show is fine. I think if you haven't watched it yet, you're not the target audience. The target audience is people who are massive Star Wars fans who probably rewatch all the prequels before starting the show. And I think the reason I say it is because it really relies on you already caring about Obi-Wan and Anakin before watching the show. I don't think the show on its own does enough to make you care enough about these characters for the payoffs to really work. And along with that, I think some of the supporting characters are not written fantastic. And it's just, it's fine. It's fine Star Wars. If you're if you're the Targaryens, you'd already watched it. So you don't need to go watch Obi-Wan. It's not another Mandalorian, in my opinion.
Does it do that thing kind of like the Solo movie did, I'm told, I didn't watch it, where it's like, oh, finally, we got the backstory on how on Obi-Wan bought that lamp that's in the back of his house.
Not as bad as Solo did.
Okay.
A little bit of that, but it's not that. That's not my issue with the show.
Gotcha.
My issue with the show is that it doesn't do enough on its own to make me care about the characters, and I think some of the side stories are just not good. So yeah, like I said, if you're a Star Wars fan, you already watched it, so don't go out of your way if you're not a Star Wars fan. And then I'll do another quick hit before I pass over to you, Perk, just on the Disney Avenue. Watched Thor 2 in my rewatch of the Thor movies before Love and Thunder. Probably won't rewatch Ragnarok because I just watched it recently, but
gotcha.
Thor 2, I was hoping to like it more on the rewatch because I've only seen it one time, and it's widely known as the worst Marvel movie. Yeah, it's not bad. It's just super fucking forgettable. I can understand why Natalie Portman left the MCU after this movie, because God, her character's written so bad. She literally gets carried around half the movie with no dialogue, like looking like kind of passed out and shit. She's nothing to do, and they don't really elevate. Like, Thor has no arc in the movie. Like, he's the main character. He doesn't have an arc, which is actually Chris Hemsworth mentioned that in a recent interview, but he's like, yeah, I didn't like Thor 2. There's not a lot happens in that movie. The most important thing is actually Loki's storyline, which they recap in Ragnarok in like 2 minutes. So,
right,
yeah, it's not great. Probably the worst villains ever in the MCU. There's evil for the sake of being evil. No arc, nothing interesting about them. You don't need to rewatch this one, people. Don't worry about it,
or watch it ever. If you're me, who that's the only one in the first two MCU arcs that I didn't catch.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
It's all right.
What'd you watch?
So I had a couple rewatches, kind of three actually, because I went to help my brother move, and his girlfriend got heat exhaustion. So we had some plans for the evening that we canceled, and so sat in the hotel room with the folks and watched some movies. I finally got them. I've been trying to get them to watch Palm Springs.
Great movie.
Which, yeah, you've seen,
yeah.
Right? I remember we discussed it. Andy Samberg and Christina Milioti.
I think you're right.
Yep. And it's a Groundhog Day, but the twist is that she is also in the loop. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite like the original Bill Murray Groundhog Day, where he gets to keep trying new things with the woman every day. They're both stuck in it, so they get to actually develop a real relationship. Love that movie.
Yeah.
It's just so as good on rewatch. Love J.K. Simmons.
Yep.
Great guy.
God, I love J.K. Simmons.
And then immediately after, rewatched The Blind Side, which is another great feel-good movie starring Sandy B. Won her Oscar, by the way. And yeah, that's just a nice movie to watch when it's on.
Sure.
Some good feel-good bits. And then after that, rewatch of Pretty Woman.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm sure you've seen on your rom-com kick.
Actually, I didn't get to Pretty Woman. I've not seen it.
Really?
I've seen parts of it.
It's a classic. Mm-hmm. It really is good.
Hugh Grant being Hugh Grant, right?
Correct. Hugh Grant being Hugh Grant. And... Oh, I'm blanking.
Julia Roberts?
What's her name? Julia Roberts doing Julia Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Both very good. No, it's Richard Gere, not Hugh Grant.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's a great movie. Is it?
I'm never checking. I think you're right. It's Richard Gere. I just put Hugh Grant in every like 90s kind of romance movie of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, like he's in Notting Hill with Julia Roberts.
There we go. That's what I was thinking.
Another great one.
I have seen that one.
But yeah, watched Pretty Woman again. Another fun rom-com with a little bit more to chew on than the usual. So. Yeah.
I also got some...
So that's my 3-in-1. I've got one more.
Okay. I also rewatched a bunch of stuff to feel good. I watched Mission Impossible 1, 4, and 5.
Okay.
So I'll break... Here's why. All right. how the Mission Impossible movies are laid out on streaming service right now is fucking stupid, okay? Okay. Let me break it down for you. On Netflix, Netflix has Mission Impossible 1, 2, and 4.
Okay.
Showtime has 3. Only Showtime has 3. And
is 3 Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
He's
and,
great.
And then Paramount Plus has 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. Showtime locked down 3. And that's the one I wanted to rewatch the most, because I haven't seen 3 in a long time, and I love that one, because, yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman's fucking incredible in that movie. But I haven't seen Mission Impossible 1 in a long time, so I'm like, oh, let's put Mission Impossible 1. I really like that movie. I think it is...
It's better than people remember.
Yeah, it is a bit slow.
It's a lot, yeah, and it's a lot simpler compared to, like, the gravity of the big ones.
It's simpler in terms of action, but not in terms of plot. Yeah. It's more of a mystery.
No. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it's not super, like, hard to figure out, but I love that movie. I think how they dole out the mystery and the plot is really cool. I think the gadgets for the time are really creative and fun. You know, we get Luther in there for the first time. I fucking love Vic Rames' Luther. I really like Mission Impossible 1. Dang it, thank you. Gosh, I'm all off the names today. And then I will say the final action set piece of the helicopter train holds up really well. Like, that movie came on, I think, 96?
Oh, Jesus.
I think it was 96. It was the year before I was born. That fucking action scene holds up, which is super surprising. And I would say definitely go, like, watch that on your own if you want to, because it is really, really cool.
So I'm a big fan of that one, because if I'm remembering correctly, it kind of flips the script on you right away, because they have a big caper heist planned, and
it goes wrong,
in the opening scene, his whole team gets killed off.
Mm-hmm. It's not the opening scene, but it's the first thing after the opening scene where they
do that. It's oh my god, look at that. Like, it's almost like Suicide Squad.
Yeah, and he's like, and he has that
similar way.
That great scene with Kitty's like, my team's dead. They're all dead. You know, Tom Cruise, fantastic.
Oh, he's so good.
So I watched 1, and I'm like, we don't talk about Mission Impossible 2. I've never seen Mission Impossible 2. I'm not going to watch it. I know it's horrible. I don't need to subject myself.
I'm sure I've seen it. I don't remember anything about it.
I might watch it before Dead Reckoning, because I'm just hyped for that movie, but I've been trying to avoid.
Trailer. It looks so good.
It looks so good. I wanted to watch 3, but I'm not fucking paying for it, you know, on Showtime, so hopefully it'll get off of there. So then I watched 4, which is one of my favorites. I think it was the time it came out. I'm just so nostalgic for 4. Like, that was, like, the first one I really got into for Mission Impossible. And the fucking Dubai scene is just legendary. Like, him climbing up the Burj Khalifa is absolutely legendary action scene. And that movie has some of the best action set pieces. That and the when Jeremy Renner is, like, magnetized and they're putting him through, like, some heat vents and stuff to do that. And then the end fights with Ethan and the Russian guy in the parking garage, where he was fucking falling off of cars and all that stuff. Absolutely. He drives a car off the top and goes down. Insanity. So I love 4. Also really cool gadgets in 4. And then I just watched 5, because I got a Paramount Plus free trial, because I watched 5 and 6. So I watched 5 last night.
Nice.
5 is also incredible. Rebecca Ferguson gets introduced. That one is less crazy action set pieces, but the story, I think, is really good, and the villain's really good.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's just, I love those movies so much. They're so fun.
Is 6 the one that, didn't we see in Colorado?
I don't think so, because that would have came out after. We might have seen 5.
Was it 5?
No, it was probably 4, because 4 came out in 2015, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe it was 4.
Yeah, Ghost Protocol.
Gotcha.
No, that's 2011. Hold on. Rogue Nation. It wasn't Rogue Nation, that was 2015.
Okay, that's number 5?
Yep.
Yeah, because I know it's been a long time, but I didn't remember when 6 came out.
6 is the one with mustached Henry Cavill.
Yeah, where he
loads
arms.
Loads his fists, yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
They got it figured out, man. Once they figured out the whole team dynamic with, like, Simon Pegg and Luther and Rebecca Ferguson, it's so fun. Love them.
Yep, it's a dialed in format, and they just keep making the set pieces bigger, and it keeps working.
One more rewatch I have before I pass back over to you. Other night, again, feeling not great, and I'm like, I need a feel good movie, and I was on Hulu anyway for the show I'm gonna talk about after this. And you know, movie they had on Hulu, Perk, fucking Robots. And you knew I had to watch Robots, man. I love that movie.
The, like, old Disney. It's Disney.
It's Fox,
right?
Actually, Fox.
It's, yeah. I have no, like, I know I've seen that movie and have no memory of it.
It is, so this is the first time I've watched it as an adult. It is crazy what they got away with in that movie. It's a Fox Animated Pictures. They have a straight up Darth Vader reference. I'm like, how the hell did Disney let them do that? The voice cast is absolutely correct. You know, you got Ewan McGregor, Halle Berry.
Did Disney own Star Wars at that point?
Oh, that's a good point. Maybe they didn't.
I don't think it did.
Oh, great point. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. But yeah, cracked voice cast. You got Ewan McGregor, Halle Berry, Robin Williams, Greg Kinnear. What's her name? The girl from She's the Man. Amanda Bynes. Oh, love Amanda Bynes in it. Absolutely just stacked voice cast. I forgot Robin Williams. They just let him improv in this movie. Nice. And it's funny, but he says stuff that makes zero sense in the world they are in. Like, this is a world of robots, right? Like, there are no people. It's all robots. And there's a scene where he's doing fart noises with his arm. Yep. And he's like, it's hard to do because they're made of metal. And I'm like, you won't have a reference for, like, what this would be like. I was, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And then there's another scene where they're trying to come up with, like, a signal if, like, things go wrong. It's like, yo, like, ca-ca, ca-ca. And then he goes, like, Ricola. Like, the Ricola commercial for, like, throat drops. That doesn't fucking exist in this world.
Nope.
But it's Robin Williams being funny. So, you know, it's fun. The animation actually holds up. It's from 2005, but because it's all metal surfaces, it doesn't look bad. It's not like they're trying to do people. Right. That's probably why they made a movie in the first place. I think the world building is really cool, like how they make the robot city and like little gadgets they have and things that would make sense in that world. And, you know, pretty straightforward anti-capitalist plot line, which I'm a fan of. So, yeah, great movie. Would recommend.
I think in my head canon, that movie is the same movie as Meet the Robinsons.
Very different movies.
Oh, I know it. But I think similar time frame.
Yeah, you're probably right. But yeah, if you want a good, just solid kids movie, robots, can't recommend it.
How long does your Paramount Plus subscription last?
It's free for a week, so I got until next Tuesday.
Watch Detroiters or I will beat the crap out of you.
Is that only on Paramount Plus?
I think so.
I thought that was a Comedy Central show.
I think Paramount owns Comedy Central.
God damn it. All right. I will try to.
I swear.
If I can't, I'll extend the... It's only $5 a month, so it's not terrible.
Well, it's not really worth it for literally anything else, but Detroiters is on there.
I mean, there's
unless
some really,
you're a soccer fan.
There's some really good movies on Paramount Plus that I kind of watch. We'll see. But yeah.
I ran through the first two Godfathers on Paramount.
Ah, gotcha.
Yep.
All right.
They've got old stuff, but I went to the theater. And I saw Top Gat.
Fuck yes, dude. We were just talking about Mission Impossible, and they translated it, baby.
I'm saying. Oh my god, that movie was so much fun.
So good, dude.
No, really, it's fantastic. There's only a couple things I didn't love. Jennifer Connelly's character.
Ah.
She's worthless. She's there.
But she looks good doing it, dude. She looks good doing
it. She's quite pretty. No, she's I sourced it out in my own brain, what I've made up. Her character is there for Tom Cruise to have an inner monologue without talking to himself. She's just there to, like, say to him what he's thinking.
Yeah.
And for us to not have to watch Tom Cruise talk to himself. So, I think she's fine for what it is, but it was just kind of cringe and stupid a few times when it's like, oh yeah, you remember all those times?
At least we didn't get a weird makeout scene like we did in the original Top Gun. After we rewatched it recently.
I didn't, and I honestly remember so little about that movie. I've already declared the new one as much better.
Oh, it miles above.
Which is crazy, because usually the sequel is not better, especially when the sequel is, 30 years removed?
How about Blade Runner 2049? I'm just saying. It can be done.
I don't know if I'd call it better. I don't know if I'd call it
really
better. I think the original Blade Runner, like, the final cut, one of the best sci-fi movies ever made.
We should have a discussion about this later. But anyway, Top Gun.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a twofer. Watch them back-to-back or something.
I'd be down for that.
Throw it in as part of a Denny Villeneuve trip
or something. But yeah, I mean, the fact that they got cameras on actual jets and they filmed all this shit. Like, it is incredible filmmaking.
the effects are spectacular. All of the cab footage of the flying is so good. I was thinking like in typical fashion, you know, they're going to have, Tom Cruise grooming the new crop, but then I remembered it's a Tom Cruise movie. So he has to be involved.
Mm-hmm,
so I was like, he's going to find a way to be the captain.
Damn right.
Cause the whole thing was like, who's going to be the captain, the Hangman or Rooster? Mm-hmm. It's like, Tom Cruise is going to be the captain. Maverick's going to be the captain. But go ahead.
Did you cry during the Val Kilmer scene? Because I thought that was incredible.
I didn't cry, I think, because I didn't rewatch it. But I think they handled Val Kilmer super, super well.
That's what Morto's referencing, of the fact that of his real life.
It's really tragic. Condition. No, yeah. I think it's almost cruel that essentially they gave his in-universe character the same disease he's suffering from now, and then had his funeral in the movie. Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah, but they kind of...
Spoilers for Top Gun, but...
Because of his how he talks now, they kind of had...
They had to.
Yeah, but I think it was a great way of paying respect to him and like, the character. I think it was, yeah.
And so I mean, because I was really curious what they were going to do, because he, at this point, he's got a, what do you call it, tracheotomy?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Where he has a hole in his neck. He like eats through a tube.
Mm-hmm.
How is he going to possibly be in this movie?
Yeah.
Big old scarf, typing on the computer. I think that was a great scene.
Yeah.
Because there are a few times where he types something and then Tom Cruise responds and then he just leaves it on the screen.
Yeah, he just like points
that's
out.
That's what
like,
he wants to say.
It's, yeah.
Oh, I really, really enjoyed Val Kilmer's presence in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
John Hamm is fine. I don't think it needed to be John Hamm, but
no, it is
whatever.
Fine. Yeah.
Miles Teller is a star. I've known this for some time, but once he kind of kicked out of that Divergent nonsense, like the sky's the limit for that guy. He's a fantastic
actor. I still there's something about him I just don't like. He seems like an asshole to me, like in real life. You know what I mean? Whereas you have like Glenn Powell, who plays a great asshole in this movie, but I think he's like, all right, Glenn Powell's a cool dude.
That guy's so good at being the asshole, the side guy. And I love the part when he comes in at the end.
Super anime.
When Maverick went down, you know, I love that the stakes in this movie are high enough that, you know, maybe that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But of course it's not, and like they do kind of pull that rug from under us pretty quick, which is fine. I was really worried we weren't going to have Tom Cruise running.
Oh, you got to have
it. It's not really a Tom Cruise movie unless he's like running at a full clip across some distance.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was fantastic the way they had Rooster come back, shoot down the chopper, and then them
going together,
find their way to a plane, and Rooster's is backseater.
Yep.
I think that was a really good moment.
In the original plane from the old movie, like...
Yep. It was
so cool.
Oh, it was so nice. And I think it was a fantastic way to bring around the whole movie back in from the 80s.
Yeah.
80s, right?
Yeah.
Oh, also, so it was so good.
How about the opening scene when he is doing the test flight and going Mach 10, dude? That shit was fucking awesome.
That literally was just fan service, and like I'm here for it. Yeah. Like it was perfect. That because the plane is so cool,
mm-hmm.
the cinematography there is so much fun,
mm-hmm.
and like the plane windows melting, and you actually they bring you in with the tension you're there for.
Yeah,
that's
why it's so good. Like when Maverick does the course to show them that it can be done, and he's doing those fucking tight turns, you see him feel it, and if you feel like you're there with him, it is just. Man, so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to see the movie again as soon as possible. But anyway.
I'm really glad I got out to a theater for it. That's one you got to see while it's still in theaters if you haven't.
Definitely. All right. Last thing I watched, something new, finally.
Okay.
Perk, this is a show you need to watch, okay? This is a brand new FX show. And, you know, FX, they make some fucking good shit, all right?
They do.
Called The Bear. I don't know if you've heard this at all. They just dropped on Hulu. The whole first season dropped. Here's what I want you to picture. Picture the movie Chef with Jon Favreau. All right?
Yep.
Now, put it in the setting of a Chicago Italian beef shop. All right?
Okay.
Now we'll make it directed by the Safdie brothers.
Oh my.
All right. That's what this show is. This is about a super good chef, like one of the best young chefs in the world, whose brother passes away, and he has to go back to Chicago because his brother left him the family sandwich shop to take over. And it's a mess, and all the new the people who work there don't really like him because they don't know him. And so it's him trying to fix up the shop while trying to deal with his family stuff and like the brother's loss and what does that mean for him and his character and kind of this whole family, this the found family of the shop, but also his family back home, and this all kind of merging together. Fucking incredible show, dude. Absolutely incredible. Some of the, like the best character work I've seen recently. Like we talked about with Crash, like every character has their good moment and bad moment. This show does that so much better. We're like,
okay,
there are characters that you want to hate, but it will not let you because they will show that they are people and they have sides to them. They're like you are sympathetic to. And on the other hand, something I don't see very often is that characters that you like a lot and you're rooting for, and then they fuck up and you're like, God, why'd you do that? Like, you messed up, you know? So I love the characters in this show. I think the writing is phenomenal. Direction, phenomenal. It was produced by Hiro Murai, who's like the main director of Atlanta.
Oh, interesting.
Also, the guy who created the show, I'm going to pull up his stats here because I saw him in the credits and I looked him up and I was like, oh, this guy's done stuff. So his name is, I want to make sure I get it here, Christopher Storer. He directed Hasan Minhaj's special Homecoming King, which I think was one of the best directed comedy specials out there.
Yeah, I know you're about that. I think it's kind of a funny sticking point that you love the direction of that comedy special so much.
I don't know why it's a sticking point. Like I think it's directed so well, the visual funny. Effects. I'm just, all right, I gotta I bring it up. I gotta bring it up.
The first thing that you came at me with from a comedy special was the directing. It's great. And I'm it's like, great. Yeah, okay. How about the jokes?
He produced Eighth Grade, Bo Burnham's movie.
Okay, haven't seen.
He was the creator and showrunner for the show Rami, which is another Hulu show.
I haven't seen it, but I know about it.
Yeah, exactly. So this is his next project.
Rami Yusuf, right?
Yep. So this is the next show, The Bear. And I just watch the show, people. Watch the show. It is so fucking incredible. The way they, like Uncut Gems, the way they build tension in the kitchen, when shit starts going bad, people are yelling and screaming at each other, you're just locked in and really, and just feel like you're there. So good. And yeah, the main guys, he was in Shameless, one of the main characters. I haven't seen Shameless. I know people like that show a lot. He played Lip in Shameless, if anybody's okay. listening and knows haven't that. Yeah, check out The Bear, man. So good.
I'll make you a deal.
Detroiters for The Bear?
Yeah, for next week.
I feel like I have to do more than you as far as time commitment here.
What is The Bear? Is it like
8 episodes, half hour? About half hour each.
Okay. I'll make you do one season. I think one it's season? Like 10 episodes.
All right, fair 20 enough.
20 minutes.
I will take that deal.
All right.
Cool. All right, well, there we go. I think that's everything, right? You have anything else?
No.
All right. So next week,
there's some stuff I need to see. I've been behind. It's nice outside, folks. Give me a break.
No, for sure. I mean, look at me. I've been rewatching. I rewatched 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies in the past 2 weeks. I only watched like one new thing, but, you know, I also got to get caught on Barry still, which I will do. But anyway, next week we are following our boy, Michael Pena, to Fury, movie he did with Brad Pitt and John Bernthal, among others, tank movie. It is streaming on Tubi only. Which is free with ads, so it is available free, but you can also rent it if you don't want to watch ads. So, yeah, next week, Fury on Tubi, but until next time, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.